What's going on? This is Robert Gaines, Director of External Affairs with the Georgia Partnership, and I am one of the hosts for Field Notes.
Here with Merrill Kemp Wilcox, the other host of Field Notes, Director of Outreach and Engagement for the Georgia Partnership.
What's up, Merrill?
What's up, Robert? How are you?
I'm great. It has certainly been a minute since we've been on together, and there's a good reason for that. You want to tell them what's been going on, Merrill?
Well, listening audience, I built a human being. And now she's just alive in the world. I have a daughter and her name is Harriet. And anyway, I was gone over the summer. I took a little bit of time to do that. It turns out building people is hard. And having them is hard.
you took a much needed break. I missed you. I missed recording with you. So I'm glad we're back. And as always, we're talking about rural Georgia. So what is going on in rural Georgia, Merrill?
Well, it turns out time doesn't stop just because I'm on maternity leave. There's been a lot going on. It has been a impactful time for the state as a whole, but also for our rural communities. I'm excited to come together today to talk with Paige Pushkin from the Georgia Foundation for Public Education, who is joining us to discuss their Rural Education Fund. They have been operating for a while, targeting opportunities for rural education systems, schools and districts. And I'm excited to share that with our listening audience. For our educators, as well as business folks and policymakers and everybody, how can they, you know, sort of be involved in some of this good funding work?
Well, Paige is one of my favorite people, so I'm super excited to jump into this today. So let's do it.
Let's do it. Thank you so much for joining us today on Field Notes, Paige. If you would please introduce yourself to our listening audience.
Thank you for having me, Merrill. Yes, so my name is Paige Pushkin. I'm the Executive Director of the Georgia Foundation for Public Education. And we are the foundation of the Georgia Department of Education.
And one of the things that you guys do, and if I'm not wrong, you've been doing it for a while now, is the Rural Education Fund, which I was really hoping you would explain to our audience and help them understand what that does, what it has done in the past, what the opportunities are there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, it's really fun to talk about. I really enjoy the Rural Education Fund. It was formed in 2018. Our board recognized, and our board is comprised of independent members from around the state. So we really try to have geographical diversity. And at the time we had a board member, Art Dunning, who is the president of Albany State University. And he suggested funding that was directed to rural schools and school districts.
Excellent.
I loved it. And so we first did a pilot, and we did, these were small grants of up to $5,000. And so the first year that after we did the pilot, we had a pool of $50,000. So not a ton of money, but we went ahead and awarded 10 grants in 2018. And it's grown every year. So this year in 2021, we awarded our fourth class of grants. It's an annual grant. And this year we were able to go up to $10,000 per grant.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So we define rural as schools or districts located in counties with 35,000 or fewer residents.
That's the residency of the entire county.
The entire county, not the school or school district. We get that sometimes. Our school district's less than 35,000. Does that count? And it's like, oh, no, sorry. So it's like a whole county has to be 35,000 or fewer. And that's actually 106 out of the 159 counties in Georgia. Mm-hmm. So it's a large swath, which is fantastic. We're really trying to make sure that we are getting resources to every corner, every nook and cranny of the state. And we really let the schools or districts, and I keep saying schools or districts because it can really be down to a single school that applies or a whole school district that can apply. But we let them tell us what they need based on data. So we're not trying to prescribe anything. We're saying to a school or district, what do you have a need for? that you, you know, could use some extra money to do this project? And what kind of outcomes are you trying to see by receiving these funds?
So that's, I don't think I really understood that, that it can be the school or the district that applies. So theoretically, multiple schools within a district could apply. Just if you have a good idea, this is available to you. What types of programs have you seen?
Yes.
What are the criteria there?
Well, yeah. So like, for example, we had a school district in Northeast Georgia that had an elementary, a primary, a middle, and a high school. And so four schools received the money to do PBIS. And what was really cool about that was that it was, you know, because it went to all four of the schools, each school was receiving a portion of funds. It was a really coordinated effort from the earliest years all the way up through the high school years. Each school was tracking different outcomes, but it was interesting to see kind of what they were, you know, trying to create this cohesive PBIS plan. Then we've had schools, and this is probably my all-time favorite grant we've ever given because of just kind of how effective and innovative it was. But we had a middle school in Southeast Georgia that requested $3,500 for virtual reality headsets because they said this was going to increase their literacy scores, which, you know, most literacy experts will say, well, what increases literacy scores is reading, which is true. But, you know, it was only $3,500 and it was like, well, let's take a chance and see if it does. So they predicted their scores would go up by 10% and they actually went up by 13%.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I love that, like, you know, we can provide that funding for something that, you know, local dollars may not provide for, or state or federal dollars are too restrictive for, something that can be innovative or different. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you started this in 2018. Of course, you know, some things have happened since then. Tell me what changes have you seen and what people are requesting? Everyone is responding to COVID. There was a massive shift, especially in rural communities that don't have access to a lot of technology or broadband in a lot of cases. Everybody's trying very quickly to pivot and still be able to reach and serve their students. There's a lot more needs that are different or perhaps the same, but more extreme. What have you seen in terms of the applications? What are schools and districts asking for, and how has that changed with the impacts of COVID?
Yeah, so it's really interesting, that question, because March of 2019, was that when all of this
started?
When
the world went sideways, yes.
Right. So March of 2019, we had partnered with the Innovation Fund Foundation at the Governor's Office of Student Achievement to offer what we were calling a Rural Innovation Fund grant. They put in $50,000 and we put in $50,000. And so we opened
still those small grants, the
$10,000 grants.
Oh, all right. Yep.
Yeah. We started that March 1st. Well, when everything basically, you know, went to hell in a handbasket by March 13th, we pulled that grant and we decided to offer instead a COVID-19 relief fund grant. Mm. And we still had the pot of $100,000 total, 50 from each organization. We had 890 applications.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it gives me goosebumps now because we were so overwhelmed by the need, and 55% of the need was for devices and connectivity.
Just straight up, we need the technology in our hands.
Right.
My goodness.
Right. And then by the time we offered the Rural Education Fund several months later, because that was March, and we always open the REF is what we call it, the Rural Education Fund, on July 1st. It's usually open during the month of July. We kept it open in 2019 for only 2 weeks because we were afraid we'd be overwhelmed again by need. And we only had $100,000 again to offer. By that point, the need had shrunk a little bit to about 51%, but still the need has just so overwhelmingly been for technology. And it's like, you know, those of us who've been in education, we know that this has been a need. It's just that with the pandemic, it was just a dire need.
Right. It came to the top. It was always on the list, and suddenly it was the top of everyone's list. I can't imagine going through over 800 applications to award 10 grants. And $10,000 is a big grant in some communities, don't get me wrong, but globally, compared to the budget of a school, I mean, that's just not a lot of money.
No, I mean,
there must have been so much desperation.
Yeah, the need was totaled about $8.5 million.
Which, oh my goodness.
We had 100,000. I'm like, I just feel so inadequate, you know, to meet this need. I will say we were able to get another $140,000 funded through four other foundations that I know that, you know, I just reached out to them and said, hey, I know you fund, you know, this in this area. Here's some grants from schools. Would you like to fund that? And they picked it up and they did. And so it was nice that the funding community came together and was, you know, I think responsive.
That's a really cool partnership. I mean, that's such a great example of people operating in alignment. And Paige just picking up the phone and calling and saying, I know you do stuff like this. Will this work for you? Look at this need. I mean, that's cool. That's really neat.
Thanks. Yeah, it was good. We're part of this Georgia Grantmakers Alliance that, you know, kind of keeps us all plugged into other funders and what they're doing. And so, yeah, that was cool. I was glad we were able to do that. But I will say going forward now, you know, if we kind of shift to thinking about how's the pandemic changed things, you know, we have all this federal money coming down, which is fantastic, but that money is going to go away and we're still going to be here. And I think, you know, that's what I keep telling other funders and donors to our foundation is that, you know, yes, there's a glut of money right now and that's necessary and needed and will be used well. But after that, we want to still be here funding the need, whatever it is, funding innovation, funding change, making sure that schools and all children and all teachers have the access and the supplies and everything they need to be successful.
Would you say that the push or the main need now is still just straight that technology piece that people need devices, or has it shifted more?
What I hear, and you know, just kind of from where I sit, what I hear now that the need is really shifting to mental health. I feel like, you know, devices are, you know, that need is being met. And I think the state is doing a lot around getting connectivity to all communities, although that hasn't happened, but there at least is an awareness and a push towards that. I think the thing that's going to be the longer term challenge is mental health and even maybe not even like anything that's like necessarily wrong, but just children that are not accustomed to being around, you know, a whole classroom of other children. And now they're thrust back into that environment and what that's like.
You know, back when the pandemic first hit back in the before times in March and then edging into the summer in 2019, I heard from a lot of people about what it was described as the long shadow being cast of mental health concerns, because this was going to be a tough time. There was not an end in sight. It's isolating. It's stressful. There's a lot of economic uncertainty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Students are out of school where they don't have those supports, and just this awareness that right now, you know, at the time people were saying, right now we need to make sure that everybody's still getting lunch. But down the road, we're gonna need that mental health piece. And now it's, I don't know, it just strikes me to hear you say that, yep, now we're at that point. We're at the part where people have said, we've figured out, we've got some stability around some pieces, and it's maybe time to start dealing with this longer term impact that we know has happened. And again, when we talk about rural communities, there's often not a lot of supports. So I'm really interested to know, as this sort of evolves, what you guys keep hearing, you know, what are the innovations that our smaller districts and schools are looking for and could use some help with?
Yeah. So one of the really exciting things that's happened for our foundation in the last year-ish, not quite a whole year, is that we're actually merging the Innovation Fund Foundation that I mentioned we'd partnered with, but they've been at the Governor's Office of Student Achievement. They are merging now by law into our foundation effective January 1st, 2022. But it's really exciting because what that brings with it is a $5 million tax credit that is all geared towards innovations in schools. So for example, if you, Merrill, owe money to the state of Georgia, instead of paying the state of Georgia, you know, say it's $500, you can apply through our website for that $500 to go to our foundation and to go to these grants. And so it's fantastic. So it's for individuals, but it's also for corporations and anybody who owes money to the state of Georgia.
Sure.
So the cool thing about that is that will give us a pot of money that we will use exclusively to fund innovation throughout the state. And again, innovation, we don't want to come in and tell anybody what is innovative in their context. So, you know, what might be innovative in Early County, it's not going to be innovative in Dade and vice versa. So the schools or school districts will apply for the funding, telling us what innovative program they want to do, and we will fund that.
That is so cool. We are always looking for on-ramps that our business and industry, you know, community can engage with to be more involved in supporting their own workforce pipeline and supporting their school systems, et cetera, et cetera. And this seems like such low-hanging fruit of like, if you want to support the pipeline and help, you know, increase outcomes for your community or for the state at large, you know, throw your tax money in that bucket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Way to do it.
So the really cool thing about it too, especially if you're a corporation, you know, so many corporations have foundations and say they have $1 million to give away. And once that $1 million is gone, it's gone. But if they also happen to owe $100,000 to the state of Georgia, now basically they've increased their philanthropic footprint because now they can give $100,000 that's still going to K-12 public schools and to education and to workforce development and to your whole point, the pipeline. Excuse me. So it expands their philanthropic reach. So that's what I keep trying to, to tell corporations, especially like, you can still give money to us. Like you can still give to K-12. Like this is just a way to do it, you know, that's a little different. And it's same for individuals, you know, if you're not necessarily somebody who feels like you have, you know, extra money to give to philanthropy, well, here's a way that you can give money to philanthropy.
So you said that the Innovation Fund and the Rural Education Fund are combining. So is it going to be still, will this innovation bucket still be targeting small communities?
So the innovation bucket will really be for anybody. Okay. We're not, that won't be, they're merging in with us, but they're not, we're not merging those purposes necessarily.
Okay. All right. Yep. Yep.
We will still have the individual Rural Education Fund grant, as I've described it. With, you know, $100,000, $10,000 grants, hopefully. I mean, it's based on how much money we bring in each year for that bucket, but we'll still have that grant available every year. Then we'll also have the Innovation Fund grant. So when they merge with us on January 1st, we'll have, I think by then we should have about $750,000 that we'll be looking to award in grants.
That's magnificent. And then are they all in $10,000 increments? Is that sort of the cap on that, or can the innovation grants go higher?
The innovation grants can go much higher. It just depends on how much money we have and kind of what phase somebody wants to apply in. So there's a pilot phase and there's more of a scaling phase. And then, you know, there are several phases that people can apply for grants within. And all of that will be on our website, gfpe.org. So schools and districts can go there and find that information. As well as you can also go to that, the same website and apply for the tax credits, which goes through the Department of Revenue, and people get a letter and an email and all this other kind of stuff. And then after they get approved, then they make the actual donation to us.
So excellent. Just to sum up then for our listening audience, if you want to figure out how to apply, if you want to apply for either of these funds, or if you are a business or individual who wants to donate, you go to the website, which is, again, Paige?
gfpe.org.
gfpe.org.
That's it.
Got that, audience? Go get that money or give that
Please.
Money, whichever
way. Yes, both. Get it and give it. I mean, the more people who give, you know, then the bigger the fund will be. That's, you know, that's the really exciting point, you know, and we're hoping when we will eventually go back to the legislature and ask for an extension of that tax credit and an expansion of it. We're hoping we can grow it and continue to bring, you know, innovation to K-12 public schools. That's what I'm saying. Like this whole, you know, all the federal money for now is fantastic, but it's like, we're looking at the long term. Like, what do we need to be doing long term for schools and school districts to make sure that they have what they need? So that's where we step in.
No, that's so important. And I know it's on the forefront of the minds of our educators and districts as well, is, you know, there's a lot of money coming in and folks are going to be flush, and that's great because there's a lot of need. But what do you build that can withstand the loss of that money in 3 years? You know, what programs or pipelines, or is it investments in technology? Is it investments in staffing? Like, what do you put in place?
Right.
That can when the money's gone, that it can still be there.
Yeah. And so one of my very favorite, you know, this is not something done at our foundation, it's done, been done previously with these funds, but one of my favorite programs, because it doesn't, it's just a revolutionary idea. It was a middle and high school that said, you know, we know that there are students who are dropping out of school because their age is higher than their grade level should be. So what they ended up doing is restructuring a school year to where half the school year was eighth grade standards, half the school year was ninth grade standards, and then students could enter after that one school year, they entered 10th grade and they were age appropriate for 10th grade.
Huh.
Yeah, so they did credit recovery by right. offering that one kind of compressed school year. So, you know, you think about something like that, that's not, that doesn't need technology necessarily, that just needs somebody to say, how can we catch these students up faster and keep them in school by getting them to the grade level that's appropriate for their age level? And so I love ideas like that. To me, that's like the personification of innovation. You know, what is it that you can do that just breaks out of the box of this, the normal? Well, eighth grade should be a whole year. Ninth grade should be a whole year. Too bad if you're, you know, 18.
That's so powerful too, that this fund exists, because innovation is by nature, it is something new. And so it's higher risk, right? Yes. And trying to when resources are tight, trying to try new things, untested things, and pour resources into them, that when there's a lot of other places that those resources are already needed, it's a hard ask. And so having a fund like this, I think, is such an important intervention. That's great.
Yeah. And we tell businesses too, like, you have research and development, you test ideas that fail all the time. Like, schools need to have that same level of, you know, they get to test an idea and see how it works and see where they need to change it and then scale it and, you know, iterate it around other schools and school districts. And so we get to be that kind of fund for testing things out. And I love that.
That's so cool. I love it. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. So as we go forward and we continue to sort of respond to COVID, recover as this federal money is coming in, but not forever, what if you had a wish list, how can we continue to support our rural school districts based on what you're seeing? What's our audience takeaway of, like, with our magic wand, what are the big needs and how do we get in there and intervene and make sure that all of our students are thriving?
Ugh, that is like such a gargantuan question.
I know, no problem, right? Just,
yeah,
let me, you know, just, with our magic wand.
Right. You know, I mean, I think one of the things I hear of a lot that I just think is like so important is the teacher pipeline. And making sure that the teachers, you know, that first of all, schools and school districts have enough teachers, they have the right teachers, that, you know, new teachers are willing to go to rural areas or areas that may not be, you know, the same as where, you know, they grew up. So I think the teacher component is key for the success of students. And then, you know, really it's, you know, it's the scalable things. Like, I think about like AP classes, you know, do you have a teacher who can teach an AP chemistry class, for example, and how many students at your high school need the AP chemistry class? Even if it's two or three, those students still deserve the opportunity to be in that. So is that, you know, a distance learning program? Is that, you know, something that's more, you know, several districts together come together and create a class? I don't know. Maybe they should apply for innovation funds though.
Maybe they should.
Yeah. So, you know, I think about all of the access pieces for rural schools and rural kids, you know, just making sure that they have the same opportunity that a kid, you know, in Atlanta or Marietta or Gwinnett or wherever has. So I would say, yeah, the teachers and then the access points for students.
Amen to both of those. I love it. Paige, thank you so much. Thank you not just for sharing your story with us today, but for the work you're doing and making sure that these opportunities are accessible to our smaller districts and to districts across the state. and that they have a way to try new things to serve our students to make sure that we achieve the success that we need.
It is absolutely my pleasure. I have the best job ever. I wouldn't trade anything. So thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to share about what we do. I appreciate it.
And again, one last time for our listening audience, to get or give money, what's the website?
GFPE.org, Georgia Foundation for Public Education. Yep, GFPE.org. That's it.
Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, Meryl. So we just had a great conversation with Paige Pushkin, Georgia Foundation for Public Education. And she was giving us the rundown on the Rural Education Fund. And, you know, a couple of things really stood out to me. One is she mentioned Art Dunning, who was actually the first president of the partnership. So super cool to know that he's still supporting education across the state. But one of the things that really stood out to me was just the overwhelming need that emerged during COVID and how the resources that the foundation had could not meet the need. And one of the things that I think we've realized in doing these podcasts and having conversations with folks in rural is that oftentimes the need does outstrip the available resources. And so there's still a lot of work to do, still a lot of people we need to get on board in rural Georgia to ensure that folks have the things they need to be economically stable, to be on the right track with their educational outcomes, and to be everything that they're capable of being, and just needing some support. So that really stood out to me. And the other thing I thought was interesting was the qualified education tax credit, which, you know, in a world of financial instruments to support public education, and in some cases, private education, this one stood out because it clearly is targeted to public schools. And I think such a beautiful way, as you mentioned, to get the business community directly involved in supporting public education, where they may not have the people to put in place. They certainly oftentimes have the resources, and hopefully they will take advantage. So those are a couple of my takeaways. What did you feel like really stood out?
Oh, I agree with that a lot, especially that there being sort of I said it in the conversation, but an on-ramp for businesses to specifically be able to act to support their own communities, the families that work for them, you know, their employees, but also their own workforce pipeline, that there are ways that they can be involved with that. It's not a business's job to teach fifth grade math, but it is, but they can be a part of the solution for supporting their education and workforce pipeline. One of the things that I thought was really cool about the grant programs that Paige was describing is how they can provide a sort of a low risk opportunity for a school system or a school, like a district or a school, to try something different. Our public education institutions are recipients of public money. And so there's a lot of, first of all, there's certainly limited resources, as you were discussing, but also there's a lot of pressure. You better not waste that money. That's public money. That's taxpayer dollars. And so it's hard sometimes to try new and innovative programs, things that in business, you know, in business you can fail forward, but if you're using public money, the last thing you need to be doing is something that could just end up being a flop. It could not work, or it could not work as effectively as something else. But without the opportunity for that level or that kind of innovation, it's hard to have breakthroughs, and it's very risky to try new things. And so having there be a funding vehicle that allows school and districts to try new things without the same level of risk attached is just a breath of fresh air. I mean, that's delightful. It's so important in our school systems, especially in a quickly changing world where, I mean, Paige spoke about the need for communities to have access to technology. Well, technology changes so quickly these days. Right, the moment that you get it, it's already different. You know, there's already a new thing out there. And so in a very fast changing world, having the opportunity to innovate
is just so important. We're going to need new ways of doing things. But how can you find them if you can't test them out? Anyway, oh, it's very philosophical, but I think that this program offers a lot of much needed supports that have a lot of impact, especially in our smaller communities.
I couldn't agree more. The stakes are high, but we do need avenues to try new things. So, you know, kudos to Paige and her team, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else she's able to do at the foundation. So this is another episode of Field Notes. We are signing off.
Thanks for listening. And hey, if you're out there, either in the school systems you want to apply, in the business communities you want to be a donor, get involved. Call Paige.
Catch y'all next time.
Hey there, listener. One more thing before you go. You've been hearing from us, but we'd love to hear from you. We at the Georgia Partnership always want to get better at what we're doing. So let us know what you think so far. Also, what are we missing out there across this great state? Who's doing cool things in your neighborhood to support the education and workforce pipeline? What innovations and solutions has your community come up with around economic development? Are there some great partnerships between sectors like housing, health, transportation that are making a difference in your educational outcomes? We'd love to hear about them and spread the word about good work being done across Georgia. We hope to hear from you. To contact us, go to our website, gpee.org, and click on the Contact Us tab in the top right corner. Or give Robert, our communications guru, a call at 404-223-2464. Thanks for listening, listener.